the middle, and that is caught in the end zone by Benjamin. Simeon gets hit as he throws, and it's picked off at the 11-yard line. Newton jettisoned him. That's tipped in the air, and it's picked off at the 43-yard line. C.J. Anderson, he's inside the 10. He goes to the end zone, and the kick is no good.
Football is back, can you believe it? Christopher Wesseling is here next to me in the studio. This is Greg Rosenthal, and we're back here on Thursday nights. If you're a regular podcast listener and you haven't been with us during the regular season, we kick off every preview show up here, me and my fellow scientist Chris Wesseling, talking about the Thursday night game before getting to all the previews. So Dan Hansis, Mark Sessler, they'll be on the show soon. But let's talk about this Broncos 21-20 victory. This was a better game than Super Bowl 50 by a long shot, Chris Wesseling.
I loved it. I loved every minute of it, back and forth. So many key plays in the third and fourth quarters. Absolutely better than the Super Bowl.
And let's start by talking about the Broncos offense, because, you know, there's a lot of questions about Trevor Siemian, and there's questions about what effect maybe Peyton Manning's loss is going to have in the running game. And your boy, C.J. Anderson, to me, I guess if you're picking a player of the game, I think it has to be C.J. Anderson.
He looked fantastic. He was decisive. He showed a great burst, cutting ability to get himself into the second and third levels. This is a guy who I thought was the best running back in the AFC from November through the playoffs last year, and he looked even better tonight. He was fantastic.
The burst, I mean, he moved so well. He made people miss. And the cutting ability, and just it's crazy to think that Ronnie Hillman was starting over him in the divisional round of the playoffs, right?
Malpractice.
It's insane. There was a lot of talk, Peyton Manning's going to get them into the right play, and I thought one of the really smart things on the broadcast said by Chris Collinsworth and supported by Peyton Manning was that, yeah, last year, it's a hybrid Peyton Manning offense, Gary Kubiak offense. Now Peyton Manning's gone, and you see some more of those Gary Kubiak running plays, and the offensive line looked good, and Anderson, it all sort of made sense tonight.
Well, for all of the grief that John Elway took for his quarterback decisions, he has two on his roster who are perfect fits for Gary Kubiak's boot action offense. Siemian and Paxton Lynch have the athletic ability. Simeon's quick release was a factor tonight, his improvisational ability, his athleticism to get out of the pocket. They were all on display. He did make a few mistakes, two interceptions while he was under pressure.
Yeah, one was on a tip pass. To me, he played a very good game.
He missed Virgil Green with a low throw in the end zone wide open, and then he took a sack deep in the fourth quarter. But other than those four plays, really played a solid game.
I thought he looked good. Even the play you're talking about where he threw it low, that was a great play by Coney Ealy. He did have that one terrible interception, but he looked like he belonged. Like the game wasn't too fast for him. He made some nice plays, even on the screen play, waiting for the pressure to get to him. Yeah, to me, he looked like an NFL starting quarterback.
He did. I don't know how long he's going to hold off Paxton Lynch, right, who was obviously more talented. But I think he showed enough to make us believe that he can play in the league for 8 to 10 years as a borderline starter backup.
And that they're not going to be worse at quarterback this year.
That's
the thing. I mean, we'll see. But they were one of the worst teams at quarterback last year, and he showed tonight.
By the middle of the second quarter, he has almost as many yards as Peyton Manning had in the entirety of the Super Bowl.
We haven't even gotten to Gary Kubiak's big decision to go for it on fourth down.
The key play in the game, I thought. You're going against the guy with the nickname Riverboat, and you out-Riverboat the Riverboat. Kubiak has an analytics guy in his headset, and he got this last year. So he understands the fact of probability in determining the outcome of football games. He could have gone for a field goal to tie, and you mentioned John Fox would have definitely
gone for it.
Kubiak decides on fourth down to go for it, get the touchdown. They take their first lead of the game and really never look back.
Well, not to mention having a feel for the flow of the game. I think the offensive line for Denver mostly dominated. I mean, what did they finish with? 148 yards, including 28 by Andy Janovich. Great post by Dan Hansis on the end around about Janovich's touchdown, the first touchdown of the season. And it's a wild game because to me it punctures a lot of these offseason narratives that we've heard, not just about the Broncos, but also the Panthers, which we'll get to. I know we can't take all the whole show up. But one of them was that the Broncos' luck is going to run out at some point, that you can't keep winning these crazy close games. And, you know, it didn't, you know, this was a repeat of the Broncos season from a year ago. They were in a tough spot, down 10 points at halftime. They end up winning a crazy game, a comeback. They win by 1 point, and they get some breaks, too, along the way. Graham Gano misses the field goal to end the game. That's the biggest break you can get. And they got breaks in terms of the officials not calling a handful of hits when defenders hit Cam Newton in the head. And I think that's going to be probably the national storyline coming out of this game, is a lot of this talks of hits to the head.
Yeah, he took at least four helmet-to-helmet hits.
And only one was called.
Only one was called. And that could have changed the outcome of the game if some of the other ones were called. And I really think the hit where DeMarcus Ware bent down low, James Harrison style, with great leverage at his age to still be doing that, Ware knocks Cam Newton's helmet into Von Miller's oncoming helmet.
Yeah.
Pretty violent hit, and that wasn't called. But that, to me, was one of the momentum changes in the game. The Panthers' offense didn't do much after that play.
Well, yeah, you're right. Cam Newton took a couple big hits, and in the second half, I thought they played a flawless first half. Carolina came out really on top of things on offense. They only got four drives in the first half because one of them was 9.5 minutes and 18 plays. They scored 17 points on those four drives. That's tough to do. They had almost more yards in the first half of this game than they had the entire Super Bowl, or rather the Broncos did too. Both teams were moving it back up and down the field in the first half. Second half was a little more how we expected, close to the vest. Despite Cam Newton's poor passing numbers overall, he ends up 5.9 yards per attempt. I don't think he struggled in this game. I think he played pretty well overall.
Well, I thought he was dynamic for 2.5 quarters. He was kind of silent from that Von Miller hit until the end of the fourth quarter, but he still leads the Panthers into a 50-yard field goal attempt for Graham Gano. He needed a couple of penalties to make that happen, I think you mentioned that he threaded a perfect pass to Ted Ginn on the sideline.
Oh, my gosh.
To get Gano into range.
That was an amazing 6-yard throw. The play by Olsen before that, he made a couple nice plays with his hands to set up the field goal. Cam Newton also got the ball back with 4 minutes left, needing a touchdown to win it. Gets him into field goal range. Then they run the ball a couple times. Wasn't sure about that. They kicked the field goal. So he had the ball moving in the last 5 minutes when he needed to. That's part of the reason why this game was so good. I mean, there's like a million different things we can talk about, but all I can think about is poor David Ealy. I mean, I hope he didn't bring the champagne bottle that he had for the Super Bowl. That's, of course, our guy downstairs on the edit desk. He famously had the champagne bottle of the Super Bowl, didn't get to open it at work, and then what a crushing way for the Panthers season to start.
Two straight games for the Panthers in which many of the breaks go the Broncos' way.
And I don't think you come out of this game, if you're a Panthers fan, feeling terrible in terms of the future of this team. I didn't see any signs from them. Oh, they got run on a little bit. That would really worry.
They were controlling this game for nearly three full quarters.
What a game we could keep talking about, and there will be a lot of fallout from this game. But we want to preview the rest of Week 1 slate, 15 games. Let's send it over to Big Dan Hansis.
The Around the NFL Podcast believes you have the ability to make the leap.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
See the pointing? All the pointing?
Yeah.
This is on television, on camera. This is good for communication. It pops on TV.
How is also on
Show Business
audio,
101
on an audio podcast. That's how most people are probably listening.
Yes, and I will. Our Thursday night, early Friday show, and our Sunday night recap, our flagship show, will be on video as well. And you could find that where, Greg?
Apple TV. You could find it. You could find
something
it
something better.
YouTube.
NFL.com.
NFL Now. No, you cannot find it on NFL.com. NFL Now would do it, though.
Okay.
Dan, how is the body language over here? I'm staying absolutely still for the entire show.
It's a little puzzling. A little tight. You want to loosen up because you're cool. You're a cool football guy, man.
All right. Well, I'll try that.
Anyway, but some of these shows do their video podcast and then the audio podcast suffers. You know, come back to us, everybody. We will not compromise the audio
happen.
Show.
No, our video show is going to stink, and the audio show will be great.
Exactly. That is what we go for.
Everyone should watch it. It will help us out, especially when we put it on YouTube. We're going to clip it up on YouTube. We're not going to show the whole show. NFL Now, if you want to watch the whole program.
As they would say, snackable content, a horrible phrase.
So we finally made it to real football, and you heard at the top of the show, that was Wes and Greg chopping up and making snackable the Thursday night opener between the Broncos and Panthers. And what we're going to do now is break down the rest of the game. So let's figure it out. 32 teams. Two teams already play Thursday night. So that leaves 30 teams divided by two. 15 games to talk about. Nailed it.
You've gotten better at this.
You are. You're on.
I got a 39 on a state-mandated math test in 1995, but now things are coming together, I feel like, for me. Anyway, we're all excited. Let's talk some football. And to do that, Sid, I think there's only one way to bring it in, and we have to bring in some familiar voices from football past.
There's glory in the legends of this hard muscle life, and there's poetry in each season made of sweat and strife. Winds whisper of high hopes. Victory is in the skies. A season awaits with glory in her eyes. One joins with many on summer's green field. Time to strive, to dare, for all not to yield.
Sam Spence, John Facenda.
One too many cups of coffee for John Facenda there, potentially. He just went on and on.
That song, or that spoken word intro, titled A Season Awaits. No longer. And we start with the 1 p.m. games. That's what we'll do. We'll go straight through the schedule, 1 p.m., and then 3, 4 p.m. games. This is all Eastern Standard Time. Sunday night football game, then the two Monday night tilts. And we will start, gentlemen, with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Atlanta Falcons. Oh, shiny new building, beautiful new dome structure, Chris and Mark. I know you guys are, you know, not dome guys, but this place seems like it could be special. But forget about all this. Who else could be special? Greg Rosenthal. Jameis Winston, here's his first game in year two, a breakout season in your mind.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a top 10 type of quarterback this season. There's no quarterback I'm more excited to watch this weekend, just in terms of he's so aggressive down the field, and he's going against a defense that's going to look a lot different this season with the two rookie linebackers, Deion Jones, Devondre Campbell. Vic Beasley will be in the starting lineup for this team. Maybe the Falcons defense under Dan Quinn in the second season can start to look a little more like that Seahawks style, fly around the ball, and they're going to be pretty good this year. So I think this is a fun little NFC South matchup.
I mean, you have been the NFC South's torchbearer all offseason, and you're sticking to it, and I admire your resilience on this issue. Do you feel like you've also in our go get?
He's already
lunch,
having to be resilient.
He's had to be resilient. Yeah. Season they started. Yeah. I mean, you talked about the Bucs as a wild card entry. You have a sandwich on that.
Yeah.
If they don't win a game against a middle of the road type of Falcons team, are you concerned about everything at this point? Right in the early part of September.
It's week one. You know, it's a road game in the division. I think all four of these teams have a chance to make the playoffs.
I was going to say, this is a toss-up to me, right, Wes?
Yeah, I look at this as two teams I see as wild card contenders. But I don't know if I want to read too much into the first week, considering the Falcons roared out to a 5-0 start last year and didn't end up in the playoffs.
Right. We've learned not to overrate week one too much. But when it's division games, they do count a little extra. It shows up a little extra at the end of the season.
I'm very curious to see where Matt Ryan stacks up in this game. Is this the beginning of a bounce back tough season or the continuance of a decline that really has been sneakily going on for a couple of years?
I know I crowed all offseason that, a second year in Kyle Shanahan's offense, you're going to see a whole new Matt Ryan. You know, but in the preseason, we saw some of the similar errors that crept up last year.
I'm wondering, too, about this Bucs defense. I think it's been an underrated story. You get rid of Lovie Smith, who I used to believe in, but you get Mike Smith. Maybe the defense is a little more modern. You have the pass rush, which we've talked about with Noah Spence. You get a quality veteran in Robert Ayers. And your secondary is completely different. You have a top 12 pick. You have Brent Grimes. I don't know if that's going to work out. But
got Miko Grimes.
You've got Mike Smith. I think if people forget how truly bad this Bucks defense was a year ago with Kwon Alexander. If Levante David is Levante David, this could be a lot better on defense.
Go ahead, Wes.
If you look at Daniel Jeremiah's recent article on the top rookies, he thinks Hargraves is a defensive rookie of the year candidate. He
had him number two.
He looked really good in the preseason.
All right, guys, let's move on now. The Minnesota Vikings travel to Nashville to face the Titans. And, Wes, this is a game where you have the Vikings, who are probably still in a little bit of shock that they're entering the season with Sean Hill. You got Sam Bradford waiting in the wings. But for you, Chris Wessling, just like Gregory here, well, just Greg, birth name of
it's
Greg.
Just Greg. The double G at the end ends the name.
Hard stop.
It's been a problem for me my whole life. I fought through it. Resilient.
It's a good forum for you to vent on that.
Just as you're excited, Greg, about Jameis Winston, Wes, honking all summer about Marcus Mariota, and here we go. You're going to see something special in week one, right?
Honking going back to last year. This guy was impressive. I thought Marcus Mariota had one of the better rookie seasons we see, and that was with no help from the offensive line, no running game whatsoever to sell all the fakes they were doing, and Smurf wide receivers who can't make plays one-on-one or down the sidelines. All of that has changed now. The offensive line massively upgraded. Two really solid running backs. This could be the best rushing attack in the NFL. And then you bring in a rookie, Tajay Sharp. You sign Rishard Matthews. Bring in Andre Johnson for a little wisdom in that clubhouse. Everything's different in Nashville.
I mean, the Vikings average more rushing attempts per game than any team in the league last year. So you're looking at two teams that want to do the same thing, especially when you have a 36-year-old Sean Hill in the game, who the last time he started in week one was in replacement of Sam Bradford in 2014. It was a horrendous affair. So are we expecting anything more through the air?
Well, do we know Sean Hill is definitely starting this
we
game?
We don't know yet.
Well, it seems like it, but yeah, we'll...
Mike Zimmer's trying to play a little mind games, and Mike Mularkey's having none of it. He said basically Sean Hill and Sam Bradford are the same bad quarterback. So it doesn't matter which one's starting.
Yeah, he said they're close enough that we don't have to prepare any different, which is a shot at Sam Bradford. If there's not enough difference between Sam Bradford and Sean Hill, the Vikings are in big trouble this year.
And Tennessee was very bad by the end of last year, and they look like a much improved unit. And that's why I think it's all the more important now when they decide to keep Mike Mularkey, get out to a good start here in your building against the Vikings team that is dealing with some stuff right now. This should be a game that the Titans win. If they want to be the team of ATL. Team of ATL. Take care of business on Sunday.
It'd be interesting that the last two NFL rushing leaders are in this game, DeMarco Murray and Adrian Peterson. Which one has a better game?
And well, you think that DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry are going to just way out gain Adrian Peterson. I guess we all think that.
After your failed go-get-my-lunch bid.
I mean, Peterson's not going to get potentially 8 to 10 carries taken away from him either.
That's true.
Here's the thing, though. The Vikings don't have any problems on defense. This is the same defense that they had, and they've got a lot of young players. If anything, they've added talent, and they're going up against an offense, which all those names you said sound great, and the running game is going to be better. But it's not easy to suddenly completely replace your wide receiver group. It is, and it's an improvement. There's no doubt it'll long-term be an improvement. But usually with those sort of teams where it's rookies and free agents, you expect them to come out a little slow.
Titans win this game, Wes?
Yeah, no question.
You're pumped up. You're confident.
Let's show the NFL world what we have in Nashville.
Wait, it's a Let's now?
Yeah.
You're on
team
the
team of ATL.
I think we have a new fan.
By the way,
we have
Connor Orr, one of our correspondents in Nashville. And he is currently in a dive bar drinking a drink with a big stick of bacon out of it. He's in heaven. So
interesting.
Shout out to him.
Bloody Mary?
By the way,
not sure.
Well, I will say,
are you upset
this.
You're not going to be assigned the Titans game? That means
I've already spoken to Ely about this. It was the first thing I requested on Monday, and he told me
he
that
failed.
Connor is there on site, so I can't watch this game.
You can focus better a little later in Game Pass, you know.
Wes, if you're trying to distance yourself from Team of West TL and all that honking,
ugliness,
saying, you know, we and they already before the voting has taken place,
going down a straight
makes
road.
It feel like it's a farce a little bit.
I took a straw poll of which you were already aware in the newsroom, and basically we've got four votes for the Titans
well,
and Team of ATL.
Well, you know, what you didn't think about here is when you have the right vote, you want to make Election Day right away. You never know what's going to happen on Sunday. They get blown out.
They lay an egg. I'm out. I'm telling you, I'm out if they lay an egg on Sunday. Very important.
What is your issue here?
You don't want to just enshrine them before the season starts?
You want to crown them? Crown their ass.
You want to make this official?
Well, we have to have
I'm not ready yet.
We
I want to see a game.
We have
that
to
is
have
fair.
Pastries and
oh, yeah. Danish and
Danish coffee.
Hey, let's see stuff. Something I'll in September, on. Not just August.
Let's move on and let's move on to the Cleveland Browns. Mark Sessler, a new season, new hope with Hugh Jackson. They travel to Philly. And this, all of a sudden, I think is a very winnable matchup for the Brownies, who haven't, by the way, haven't won a season opener in over a decade. But now Carson Wentz, and I don't care what anybody says, I don't like the way they played this. I think this is a guy that is not ready to start football games, and he might struggle badly in week one. So the Browns have a window here. Do you agree with me?
Well, the where I would have an issue with that is that if you're Carson Wentz and you're the Eagles, this is a kind of matchup against any NFL defense from what we've seen over four preseason games. You talk about a rookie facing another NFL opponent, that Cleveland's defense is littered with rookies and first and second year players that have very little experience and have not played together. And so, yes, if you're Hugh Jackson, you want nothing more than to face a rookie quarterback who missed the last 3 weeks of the preseason. But I don't think that Cleveland has a distinct advantage because, honestly, at this point, until we see otherwise, they are a bottom two or three team in the league, talent-wise. And Philadelphia's defense with Jim Schwartz running the show is the story of this game. I think they can shut down Cleveland's run game. And if it's low scoring, that's fine. Philadelphia has more talent. I'd be shocked if they don't win this.
I agree, and we're talking about two.
Wow, shocked.
Two franchises.
He's protecting himself.
I am not. Continuous.
Yeah.
Two franchises acquiring draft picks and looking toward the future. I think that's a pretty interesting matchup, and I do agree the Eagles are further along because when you look at that defense, there's so much more talent in Philadelphia
well,
than Cleveland.
We don't know what this Browns defense is going to be. On paper, it looks like one of the worst defenses in the league. I am more confident in RG3 and their offense than I am in their defense, which is not a good sign.
I mean, they're
right? Considering what we've last
their
seen.
Their defense was a bottom three defense last year, and they've replaced the few veterans they had with players that have never played in the NFL.
And maybe that's what you should do. Maybe they'll be better. You got Ogba starting. I think you're starting two rookies at outside linebacker. Joe Schobert.
I like Ogba.
Joby.
Get ready Joby. For Joe Schobert.
Yeah, big Schoby fan. You know who's not picking the Browns this week is, I think he works here, Brian Billick. Said he stared at the Browns' schedule and doesn't see a win.
Well, I don't think in this room that we like to look at schedules early in the year and go through all that exercise, but he may not be far off, but the Browns are not building for this season. It's down the road. The one thing that kind of, if you're a Cleveland fan and you're scared of something, it's Wentz ripping off three touchdowns through the air and running for a 45-yard score.
Sign.
Because it pits everything that they wanted to be. There's going to be a lot of hot takes coming out of this game either way.
Well, that's interesting because the Browns essentially told Tony Grossi, we didn't see Carson Wentz as a guy who could develop into even a top 20
an odd move.
Quarterback.
Wouldn't it be something if Carson Wentz has that week one, like, oh, by the way, we've been hiding what we have with Carson Wentz this whole time, just like the Redskins were hiding RG3 back in 2012.
Yeah, you'd love that,
wouldn't you?
And he came
and dropped a bomb on the Saints.
Doug Peterson hinted at that Monday's press conference. They've been doing a lot of read option. They've been doing a lot of different fakes, play action, pistol, who knows?
I would have never thought the Eagles-Browns, by the way, would be one of the most watchable games of week one. But this is a fascinating game to me because you just don't know anything of what's going to happen.
Well, let's find out if it's actually watchable before we call it watchable.
You could say that for a lot of these games too. This is a wide open week.
Yeah.
If you're in knockout pools, you're chewing on the old fingernail.
I think Browns fans have about another 48-50 hours to kind of bask in the glory of the offseason storylines, and then the games begin.
Mark, over under Terrell Pryor receiving yards on Sunday, 65.
Under.
All right, Mark, a lot of hope. No believe landed.
I believe in the long-term plan. I don't think that they're asking fans to ask for 10 wins this season.
All right, let's move on and talk about the Cincinnati Bengals, who in their last game, oh, Marone, a crushing playoff loss where they just completely collapsed and should have had a win against Pittsburgh. So now they want to get some revenge, and they head to the Meadowlands to face the New York Jets, who this is the thing that jumps out to me in this game right away. I'm excited about the team in general, the Jets. I'm excited about the defense's potential. I want to see Darrell Revis. And I like that right out of the gate, I get to see him against one of the best wide receivers in the league, A.J. Green, because, Greg, he struggled, Revis did, against top wide receivers last year. And now let's see. If he's fully healthy, will we get the old Darrell back, or is it old Darrell?
Well, I was surprised to hear the Jets say I believe it was Thursday, that, well, Revis isn't going to just take AJ Green one-on-one. It's not like we're just going to leave him out there and it's just going to be one guy tracking him around the field and he's not going to get any help, which I don't know. When you, 5 years ago, they're not saying that.
Do they trust Revis to do that
today? And why, it's weird that coaches would say that at all. Maybe they're just making it up, but basically they're saying he's not the guy from 5 years ago. Because they wouldn't have said
Well,
that.
That's not a crazy thought. I mean,
no.
He's 31 now.
Well, they talked about they've even talked about a shift to safety at some point and maybe was even on the table for this year. I look at this game and I feel like someone
I don't think it's on for the table for this year.
I would be surprised, but we're already seeing hints of him not being the guy he was before. I mean, this could be a big game for someone like Gio Bernard, who, you know, you got no Tyler Eifert. If Revis does swallow up Green, then maybe Tyler Boyd in the slot gets some snaps as well. But you have to go somewhere else if Green's getting taken care of.
Why not Jeremy Hill against a defense that no longer has Snacks Harrison on the defensive line?
Another option.
You think that's a bad run-stopping group, though? I mean,
it's still gonna be
Muhammad Wilkerson, Leonard Williams, those two guys are great run-stoppers. I'm just saying most teams don't have those two guys up front as run-stoppers either.
I'm not saying they're bad, but I also think Jeremy Hill looked great in the preseason.
Yeah.
This can be a good rushing attack. I don't know what the Jets' run defense will look like without Damon Harrison, who was the best run-stuffing defensive tackle in the NFL for the last couple of years.
I'm more concerned about the Jets' back end than I am at the line, but we'll see what happens. I think this is another game to me that's a toss-up. The Jets at home, the Bengals trying to find their way with a new offensive setup and missing some pieces. No Hugh Jackson. Let's see what happens.
Out of pressure on Andy Dalton.
What about on Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Yeah.
Ryan's going to have another nice year. You guys just watch.
Not doubting you, but I do think he needs to get off to a nice start.
Yeah, and he did not look very good in the preseason. I will say that. All right. Let's move on and talk about the Oakland Raiders, who we talked about this last week or earlier this week on the show, that the Raiders were kind of hype bunnies earlier in the offseason, then it quieted down, which I think almost could work out in their favor a little bit, Greg. And now they head to New Orleans to face your boys, the Saints. To me, another game that could be a toss-up.
Yeah, these are two teams where if they were 6-win teams or 10-win teams, neither would surprise me for either one of these teams. I don't think we're just locked in that the Raiders are going to be a winning team right now. I think the Saints accomplished something very big this week, though, with that Drew Brees contract. They threaded the needle of making him happy, extending his contract, and not mortgaging their entire future in terms of counting on him being a great player until they were 40. And I give Brees a little bit of credit that I think he had them over a barrel, and he could have made this more complicated than it was, and he did not do that. So I think it was a nice little week for the Saints.
And more money.
Point.
Yeah, more money to patch up what a defense that last year was historically awful. And the one thing about Sean Payton's later career in New Orleans is we get that you have an excellent offense every year in your nice little dome, but you cannot continue to allow teams to score 35 points on you. I mean, this is a team that lacks balance, and it's a great opening game for the Raiders to try to display what they want to do on offense.
Well, maybe this is the year your boy, Dennis Allen, 2013.
How is he my boy?
Wasn't he 2013 making the leap candidate? Now he'll make the leap as a defensive coordinator.
So strange what Greg's able to remember, because some days I wonder if you even remember your children's names.
Oh.
I don't remember anything.
Oh,
and now you're remembering that Dennis Allen was a 2013 making the leap candidate on our website.
Help me understand how the Saints are on the Raiders level. The Raiders have one of the deepest rosters in the AFC. The Saints have signed two players off the street in the past week who enter the starting lineup. I think the Saints have a shallow roster. They don't have a good defense. No matter how you want to spin it, that it's better than last year, they have tons of holes on this roster.
It's not a great roster, but I think on offense, you said, how can they be at their level? Because they've got a top 5-6 quarterback.
Well, they're going to need more than that.
They have Mark Ingram, a guy you love. They have C.J. Spiller, a guy you loved, who looked very good in the preseason. They have Willie Snead, who had a great, great rookie season. They have a number one receiver in Brandon
Ingram and
Cook.
Spiller probably combined to average about 1 yard per carry in the preseason.
But didn't
this
think,
offensive line's a mess.
Yeah, I mean, if the offensive line plays like it did in the preseason, they're in trouble.
I think it's a good test for their offense, because Oakland's defense, it has players at every level, and their secondary, which was for years a disaster, finally has some talent back there.
If the Saints get shut down in their building in the season opener, that's a bad sign and a very good sign for Oakland. And I, by the way, I like Kobe Fleener more than you do this year. And I know the reports haven't been glowing about him, and this room in general hasn't been that high end Fleener. I think this is a good setup for him. I still think.
So you're going against my advice and playing him this week in fantasy.
Well, I have Jared Cook as a guy.
Oh.
I'm not sure. I might go with Cook. Out of respect for the man that built it, calloused hands.
Fleener's a better fantasy player than NFL player.
That's fair. All right, let's move on now. And the next 1 p.m. game we'll discuss, an AFC West battle between the San Diego Chargers and Kansas City Chiefs. And, Wes, before we started the show today, Greg and I were talking about how some people, I don't want to get into specifics who, have the Chargers as a very big underdog this week.
Second biggest underdog in the entire NFL this week.
Right.
San Diego
Chiefs. That is baffling.
I don't want to specify where these type of comments are coming from. It might be a desert area. Have I given away too much? I don't know. Wes.
I was in the Joshua Tree last week. That's a desert area. You talking about that?
Were people ripping the Chargers there?
No. Nobody's caring about the Chargers.
Are the Chiefs that better
than
the
Chargers? What do you remember from Joshua Tree? Answer the question, Wesley.
Very little.
Are the Chiefs that much better than the Chargers?
No, I don't think they are. I think everybody's sleeping on the Chargers, who I believe lost more games by 8 points or less than any team in history last year. I think it was 8 or 9 games that were pretty much a touchdown or less. And they had bad luck not just in final scores but in injuries. Just decimated that roster, especially on offense. Didn't give us a chance to see the marquee matchup in this game, Keenan Allen versus Marcus Peters, because Keenan Allen missed both of those games with a kidney injury. He was on pace to shatter the record for receptions in a season before going down, and Marcus Peters could be joining that Patrick Peterson, Darrell Revis,
wow,
Josh Norman, Richard Sherman.
Yeah, that's a great point about Allen, because they were a completely different team on offense when he was out of the lineup. 90-plus yards more per game for Phillip Rivers when Allen was in there. I think he's a huge part of what they want to do. You add Travis Benjamin to the mix, that gives you a downfield element. The Chiefs, we've talked about them as a team. I think they could be an AFC championship-type team and probably stop there. But I don't look at the Chargers, based on last season, as some 3-win, just roll over you in week one and let's look at week two. There's a lot more going on with the San Diego Chargers than that.
No, these two teams always play each other tight. They did last year. The Chargers, I think it's a big bump. It's a big disappointment that Joey Bosa is not playing in this game, that he doesn't really...
Not a big surprise.
They need him, too.
But that because if you have Bosa, I feel like you have breakout potential at every level of your defense. You have 3 good cornerbacks, including Jason Verrett. You got Bosa in the mix. Now you have Denzel Perryman, who's our making the leap guy. I think they really need Joey Bosa, because that is their probably the biggest weakness on the entire team is on that defensive line.
Big week, by the way, for another person.
Uh-oh.
In the desert. Spice Rack.
Spice Rack.
Oh, I didn't
know.
Come
on, guys. Come on, Spice Rack.
And who's Spice Rack for the new listeners?
No, everyone that's listening right now has listened for 3 years, so we're good. Spice Rack is Chris Wessling's desert consigliere on all matters football-related.
College football-related.
College football-related, and is currently banned from the show.
I didn't know that was official.
It's now official. It was a salty appearance, a little unhinged. Is the word
that more than a little unhinged
that was thrown around. His initial prediction to us was that Melvin Gordon was going to be an all-pro stud. He was a bust in year one. If Melvin Gordon runs for 1,000 yards, Spice Rack, unbanned. And it starts Sunday.
It's a big year for Spice Rack.
I
think he's got a chance to reappear on the show, because Brandon Oliver's not in the lineup for San Diego no more. They're going to try to make Gordon that guy. And
he looked good.
He hit, and he explodes for big yardage on certain plays. We might get Spicy back in the studio, much to Greg's chagrin.
What is that? That's not true.
I'm just stirring the pot.
I'm with you, Spicy, this year. I got Melvin Gordon having a big year. He's coming back.
We need to get you and Spice Rack in a room together. I feel like you would get along famously.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I see it. Connect the tissue between the two. Moving on.
Both unhinged?
A jail cell.
The next 1 p.m. game, the Buffalo Bills at the Baltimore Ravens. And, Mark, we understand where you come from. You despise Rex Ryan.
I do not.
In fact, when the news came out that Rob Ryan, a defensive assistant, had been targeted in an ambush by some thugs in New Orleans who saw him as an easy target because he wasn't Lil Wayne with a bunch of bodyguards around him. That's what the police affidavit David said, you pumped your fist. I saw you in the cubicle.
That is highly inaccurate. I am not wishing for crimes to happen to these people. I would like them to keep their mouths closed when the teams they coach are incompetent.
Oh, but let's be honest here. Bills and Rex Ryan against the Ravens.
There's his old team.
There is no other matchup in the NFL that could be more loathsome to the Mark Sessler brand.
Yes,
I mean, if a giant like beam of light came down and just sucked both franchises away, I'd be fine with it. But I find this to be one of the more interesting matchups because
– Wow.
It is because we talked about the Ravens a week ago. Is it one of these other teams that they could go 4-12 and we kind of get why? Or they could go 10-6 and get back in the playoffs and we wouldn't be that mystified by that. I mean, you've got a lot of new faces. Perriman, Rashad Perriman, Terrence West, who you'll talk about an awakening in Kristen Michael. Terrence West gets out of the city of Cleveland and he suddenly looks like, you know, Jim Brown's cousin. So it's ridiculous. I mean, the guy looks like a different player to me. Like
his first cousin? Because that would, he'd be like 60.
All right. I mean, a distant younger
Here's the thing,
relative.
Jim Brown probably has lots of cousins. None of them, I don't know if any of them made the NFL.
I mean, I think the Ravens are interesting because it's not just all the players you got back from last season, but they continue to bring new guys in and coach them well. And the Bills are the one team that I look at from a coaching angle, and it's not a rip on Rex Ryan, but all we've
Here
heard all offseason, it's
Ryan. Not.
It's just the reality. I think he is the one coach that sits on a burning hot seat from week one. Richie Incognito said it today or yesterday, that it is playoffs or bust, and I think bust means reorganize if they don't get this thing done.
Let me say one thing as a Rex Ryan historian. He's been in this position before.
Yeah.
It was the year when a dreadful Jet team went 8-8.
What are you laughing at?
Rex Ryan is story.
Well, I
he
know
actually
that.
Is. He has read the biography, and he wrote a book report on it.
Yeah.
That is true.
Who else read Rex Ryan's autobiography?
I read a large portion of it in the Santa Monica Library and dispensed of it.
What?
It was not well written.
Why were you there?
Don't ask.
I have a Sessler about this kid.
By the way, even Rex has not read the Rex Ryan
biography.
Well,
let's hear from the historians.
Yeah. Let the historian speak on Rex Ryan. Rex likes his back against the wall. And when he got fired from the Jets – he had no chance that last season because Idzik destroyed him. The Glacier destroyed him. But the year before when they went 8-8, when they should have been 3-13, Rex circled the wagons and he got guys to play over their head for him. I think we're counting out Rex prematurely. I think the Bills are going to be better. And I'll tell you something else on the other side, Wes, before I throw it to you. Baltimore Ravens, they're going to win some football games in the National Football League this year. Because people sleep that John Harbaugh is one of the best coaches in the league.
Never had a losing record till last
year.
Well, I think a lot of people
coach.
Think he's a good coach.
They are going to be in the playoff hunt, in my opinion.
First of all, Rex Ryan's back should have been against the wall when Mario Williams was undermining his whole program last year. That didn't happen. Nobody came out swinging in the second half of the season. Second of all, I've got a feeling, I've got a Sessler, this game's going to be a smackdown. The Ravens are going to blow out the Bills.
Wow. I totally disagree. I think the Bills are going to win this game because they're way more talented. It's not a good – I think people are giving the Ravens plenty of credit because of John Harbaugh, because it's been a great organization. Like, they don't have an above-average player other than Eric Weddle maybe in their back seven. Like, they have question marks all over the place.
One note before we move on. This is a team that took a this is a 9-7 Doug Marrone team that went one win less last year with Rex Ryan. That's back against the wall. You are less successful than Doug Marrone right
Talented
now.
Talented team.
Doug Marrone didn't do too poorly before he decided to step down from head coach.
I mean, the way he engineered his
the
exit was. Yeah.
Of offensive line coach for the Jaguars.
Slightly
interesting move, career-wise.
A weird move. Let's move on and talk about the Chicago Bears who travel to Houston to face the Texans. And I like the Texans this year. I think they're going to win their division. And I think the one thing I don't know anything about, none of us do, is how Brock Osweiler will fare. But I think he draws a pretty nice week one matchup at home against a Bears team that I don't think anybody's really scared of right now. So I expect the Texans to look good. And I wonder, and I think this is two huge things for on the Texans side. How will J.J. Watt look? How many snaps will he play? Will he be healthy? Will he have a setback? I mean, it's a serious injury, as Wes, you wrote about yesterday on our website. And then your boy, Greg, Jadeveon Clowney, making the leap candidate. We're going to get a chance to see against the bad offensive line what this guy can do. If J.J. Watt looks healthy and Jadeveon Clowney is healthy and making plays and Brock Osweiler looks good and Lamar Miller is going to be a breakout star. Oh, my God, you got Nuke on the outside. You got the rookie on the other. I'm in on the Texans.
Dan's wife is from Texas, and I think all this Texas love is starting.
Give me a Dean Screen, baby. All right, I'll calm down now. Wes.
J.J. Watt said he's ready for anything and everything. He wants to play every snap. He referred to his back surgery as kind of fun after the January grueling recovery from 5 torn muscles in his abdomen. I think he's ready to go. And Mark and I have talked about this. If you watch the Texans defense in the preseason, flying around the ball like the 2013 Seahawks,
they are fast
and energetic on defense, and I feel like they're going to shut down the Bears.
Yeah, and
shut out the Bears.
Well, the other point here is Chicago.
Right.
And there's a big issue, and it's called the Chicago Bears. I mean, is this going to be one of the games where John Fox says, you know, it's Thursday, I need to sit back and relax. I think a nice 20-0 loss is the way you start the season, because he did that in the preseason, not a single bit of effort, and last year against the Seahawks. I think you got to, if you're the Bears and you're a Bears fan, you've got to see something about this team to inspire you. Not a single thing in August showed you much promise about the Chicago Bears.
They are a victim, like the Raiders a little bit, that we have 3 shows all offseason long. And like when the offseason started, we were kind of like, oh, the Bears actually were frisky. They're going to be frisky. Like, they were interesting. We were talking up their defense a little bit. They've looked so boring the last month that everyone sees them now as a bottom 3 team. And I agree with that.
Pop quiz, Mark, because you were out the podcast where I broke this news.
Okay.
How do you pronounce the offensive coordinator of Chicago's name?
Dowell Loggins.
Incorrect.
Dowell Loggins.
No, Dowell Loggins.
Okay. Why stand corrected?
Loggins. Dowell Loggins. That's true.
I don't think Bears fans are going to have to remember how to pronounce that name for much longer.
Oh, wow.
Ouch. I had the same feeling about the O coordinator in L.A. after Hard Knocks. Let's move on.
Well, the Rams go through coordinators like once every 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. Where's Frank Cignetti?
I think he's in the hard streets, you know, some gritty city, kind of flying from metropolis to metropolis, finding lost girls and jewelry.
Moving on, the final 1 p.m. game on the slate that we'll talk about, the Green Bay Packers traveling to Jacksonville to face the Jaguars, who are very ready to, I believe, maybe steal the show.
And I was in Miami with my new beach house. Well, it was a couple minutes from the beach.
Wait, what?
I love that she owns a beach house and the 4 of us are renting.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, well, we do not have this figured out.
You can infer that she probably owns 2 houses, that she has a beach house. And between the 4 of us, let's throw Connor in the mix. Between the 5 of us, we have 1 house. That's Connor's.
It's like a frame around her with a sign that says most unlikely beach house owner.
Jags lady, more successful than us. Good, I'm happy for her.
Yeah, good for her.
Here's the game that I love. The sneaky good game of the week for me is, yes, the Packers at the Jaguars. Listen, everybody knows if you listen to the show, I'm bullish about the Packers, especially that offense, which I have now predicted and put sandwiches on the line, will average 33 points a game this year, which is a lot of points.
Got to get started fast.
Well, they've done it once in 90 years.
Well, listen, there's always time for a second time, and I think it will be this year. I think they'll I'll probably lose that wager, but I think this is a team that could regularly score 30 points a game. I think they have that type of talent, and I think it's all going to come back together in a beautiful way. And then on the other side, you have the Jaguars, and let's face it, Jaguars, you got to do something. Do something now.
Yeah,
I will be furious. I will step away from NFL.com from February until September if they lay an egg and lose 41-14 on Sunday. I want them not only to compete against the Packers, I want them to win the damn game, because you can't win your home opener with all this hype around you and all this talent and this great coaching staff and this GM that everyone's like, ooh, good to be patient with this regime. Do something.
If you want to talk about one team that way, I think it is fair that it's the Jaguars, because look, plenty of good teams lose week one, and you mentioned it, Greg, we overreact to the opening week, but if you are Jacksonville, it's not just some cheesy make a statement. You have to come out and show the players that you have groomed and developed making plays against one of the most respected teams in the NFC. It cannot be an embarrassment. It needs to be an absolutely powerful showing by the Jaguars.
I feel like Jalen Ramsey is symbolic of this entire Jaguars team. Basically said this week about Aaron Rodgers, come at me, bro. I ain't afraid of you. And the Jaguars are a brash, young, talented team, confident. But they've got to go out and prove it. Maybe Jalen Ramsey can get picked on instead of...
Well, and they don't have continuity. And they, like, on defense, like, this is a team, you know, Bill Belichick said you don't know your team until mid-October. I don't think that the Jaguars are going to know their defense until mid-October, whatever it is, mid-November. They're going to need Blake Bortles to carry him. Or else Dan will no longer be working here. I mean, that was surprising.
A lot of high stakes.
Area host wants his 17th favorite team to compete or else he leaves.
No, it's more like it's not even about the Jaguars necessarily. It's about
the nature of off-season news?
Yes, exactly, Wes. And and being in this podcast studio three times a week and getting pumped up about a team and then being betrayed when real football starts.
Certainly not. The first year we took it to the limit.
They better take it to the limit
this
year.
Take it to the limit.
I have some breaking news, by the way. This news comes from Sully Sullivan behind the glass. The Falcons' new dome opens next year.
Yeah, I was going to – I didn't want to – you know, I think that
I just wasn't paying attention. I would have caught that.
I thought you were talking about the Vikings game.
It's a fair game note, though, Dan, because, you know, in this old dome one more year, will the people with their fingers on the button, if things get rough against the Bucks, be compelled to pump in that fake crowd noise one more time to get that place going?
Rough under the roof. I don't like people that say roof. It's roof.
It's a roof.
Let's move on. The late games. Starting with the Miami Dolphins, guys, who, listen, you can get excited about them. Go ahead. Have fun with it. I'm not going to, at least not now. And they draw a tough matchup in week one, speaking of knockout pools, because they got to go to Seattle to face the Seahawks, a Seahawks team that we universally believe are loaded, a 10-12 win type team. So they're not the type of team with the 12s out that are going to drop an easily winnable game against the Dolphins of all teams in week one, right? This is going to be a cakewalk. Wes?
I'm looking for reasons to believe that the Dolphins have a chance, and I'm not finding many, but this is a game. If you're Miami, there's a lot of pressure to get your season started on the right foot, because in the first 4 weeks, they have at Seattle, at New England, Cleveland at home, and then at Cincinnati. So if you say there are basically 9 Super Bowl contenders this year, they play 3 of them on the road in the first month.
One of them without Tom Brady, but I see your point.
Right. I think you could argue it's a brutal start. But if you're going to play the Seahawks in Seattle, which is on the schedule, week one might be the time you want to do it. Because Seattle, at least last year, started off slowly. 0-2, right? But they lost to the Rams. Well, we thought they were going to be great last year.
Well, we also knew
their offense, especially every single year in the Russell Wilson era, has started slow. The defense usually has started slow and then finished the season strong.
It's fair.
A question, though. Do you feel like what happened with that offense over the second half of last year, that they kind of found out who they were and there'll be less continuity issues? The concern for me with Seattle is more, again, we've seen them, Russell Wilson, thrive behind a shoddy offensive line, but they've already lost their rookie guard and they're shuffling the line around. There's people that have barely played stepping in there. That's a concern because this is a very good Miami defensive line.
If people didn't have faith in Tom Cable, their assistant head coach, O-line coach, I mean, this would be the worst offensive line in the league on paper.
Well, I mean, it is on paper.
That's a problem.
But he makes it work. It seems like it doesn't matter who's out there. It just seems to work.
I have zero concerns about the Seahawks.
Over, under, Wes. Arian Foster, 30 rushing yards.
Oh, I'll go over comfortably.
Mm. How about over, under, Kristen Michael rushing yards, 100?
I think we know the answer to what Wes will say.
Well, but Thomas Rawls is healthy, too. It sounds like they do want to give him work.
I'll say over 100 total yards.
Wow.
Okay.
You're back in on Arian Foster, it sounds like. You think he's going to be
30 yards is an awfully low barometer.
I think
in Seattle, if you fall
in
behind.
I
could see them moving the ball a little bit, think they're going to play a lot of hurry up, because I think they're going to fall behind because of what you said. I mean, the young receiver group in Seattle is fun to watch, and this secondary for Miami might be the worst secondary in the league. They're counting on Xavien Howard, who's barely practiced as a professional to be a starter, and they have a bunch of guys who they don't want to put on the field that are going to be on the field in nickel and dime.
That's a good formula.
Let's move on, guys. And I love this game. This is one of my favorite games of the year. Happens twice a year, of course. You guys don't tend to like it. Giants-Cowboys. I love the Giants-Cowboys as a New York guy. And I think, Mark Sessler, that there's a lot of reasons to be intrigued by this matchup in Jerry World. Do you agree?
I do, and you're going to like what I have to say this time because I have been very down on the NFC East. I'm shocked this isn't on Sunday Night Football, then replayed 45 times on that network on NBC 1000.
I'm sure their second matchup will be.
I mean, give me a break. But this, for me, is the sneaky most interesting game of the week because of all the new faces. You're going to get to see Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, and I don't think that because Tony Romo is out that it interrupts necessarily what they really want to do with this offense. They're going to test drive that. We do bold predictions every week. It's a sponsored piece that you have to kind of, you know, whip out some sort of wild prediction. And I did. I said that this game is going to produce.
Whip it out?
Got to whip it out in writing with your keyboard and or your typewriter if you're your house and you hold a typewriter. Whoa. What am I talking about? But anyways, I said this game would produce 102 points.
Wow.
That is
102 points. If it does not, David Ely, our editor downstairs, will buy roughly $900 worth of Chinese food for the newsroom. We've outlined what he will
buy. Wow, 9,000.
I am not confident that Ely will not be spending money on Sunday.
Can we bring it up? And if you're watching along, but we could explain it to you too. The board right now, that Romo graphic with and without him, I think that is definitely pertinent. I mean, if you look back, 1-11 without Tony Romo in 2015, less than 16 points a game.
That's with Brandon
Weeden. But it could
be
a different situation.
Right.
First time, they might have a chance to still be a top-level offense. If Dak Prescott is for real, I don't want to get suckered in by the preseason, but how could you not be?
I think they will be.
Yeah, I think that graphic should also say without a healthy Dez Bryant, too.
Right.
Without Ezekiel Elliott. And with three of the worst quarterbacks in the entire NFL, Matt Cassel, Brandon Weeden, and Kellen Moore. I don't think you put Dak Prescott anywhere near that trio of quarterbacks.
You don't know how tough this matchup is, though, because on paper, the Giants were one of the worst defense in the league last year. But with the defensive line changes that they made, with the secondary looking a little deeper, Eli Apple quietly had a nice preseason. Seemed like he looked like he belonged. I mean, the Giants defense should be a lot better this year.
You're saying 102 points won't be scored in this game?
Saying they should be respectable. By the way, Sunday Night Football, Week 14, Giants.
Called it.
Don't
surprise.
Worry.
Of course.
There we go. And I'm excited. You know, Dez is my boy. Peak Dez back in the building. He's calling himself, quote, unstoppable, and had this to say, I'm going to catch anything that's thrown to me.
Well, that's for you, for doubting him all offseason.
Hey, I didn't doubt him. You said he was done. In my findings, I have found.
That's a good point.
In my findings.
You didn't say he was done.
Bad feet and bad back, bad news.
I like,
but now you're back in though.
I like what I'm hearing from him.
I like this new bit where you are, at this point in two shows, you've decided your findings on various issues four or five times.
You guys don't know what I'm doing when you're not seeing.
That is very true.
A lot of research.
I have my own lab. I will discuss.
It's in a hollowed out volcano in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Exactly. In an off-season podcast, a video podcast, I will take everyone down into my lair where I have findings that I find.
Including the police.
I have a few things I'd like to find in that lair.
Ooh. What was that? Are you hitting on me?
No.
Can we press on?
Yes, let's move on. The Detroit Lions. You know, we don't like the Detroit Lions as a team this season, if you're following along with podcasts. And we're getting some pop in the Twitter world. Why are you guys disrespecting the Lions? Well, Greg, there's a lot of holes on this team, but they get to go in week one to face an Indianapolis team that has plenty of holes themselves.
This is a great week one matchup for the Lions to find the injury-depleted Colts roster. Offensive line certainly has question marks for Indianapolis. I was surprised to see that, you know, in this desert town you speak of, that they're looked at as pretty big underdogs. Because to me, I don't see the Colts as a favorite or a heavy favorite against any NFL team right now. I am excited to see what Andrew Luck comes out with. You know, I read this ESPN The Magazine article, which I recommend on him.
Humble brag.
Which made me start thinking, like, it's almost kind of Andrew Luck sitting there is like, everyone forgot about me? Has everyone forgot about, like, how unbelievably exciting I am? And I could see this being, talk about 100 points, a game where the offense is just run wild back and forth.
Colts dropped 40 points on the Lions in this game. Everybody's wringing their hands over one quarter of action with the Colts offensive line. I think their offensive line is going to be better than last year, and I'm not that worried about their line. I think this is a high-octane offense.
It's the two teams that have failed to produce a 100-yard rusher for years on end at this point, and it shows. I don't think that the Colts, outside of Andrew Luck, and we've harped on about this, are a balanced team, and neither are the Lions. It's a great week one matchup because you've got two really rather mystical teams going up against each other, and I think that the one reason the so-called favorite versus underdog is because a lot of people that aren't following football just think, oh, the Colts are going to rush right back into the AFC championship now that Luck's back. That is not this team.
I'm going to throw out something with the Lions here. a little Ewing theory type speculation here, because if you want to look positively, this is a good week one matchup. No Vontae Davis in that secondary for Indy. I really like Marvin Jones this year. I really like Golden Tate. Neither guy's a number one receiver, but they're both very good number twos, and that's a lot more than you could say for a lot of other teams. And maybe if Amir Abdullah has the season we thought he was going to have last year, there's some reason for hope that this team can score points.
It's a fun offense to watch. I think this is going to be a game with a lot of possessions. This is back when I did the old fantasy. This is an everyone in the pool game. You got someone on one of these teams, just put them in, because the Lions and the Giants, if I had to guess, who's going to be the fastest teams in the league, especially early in the season? I think it's the Lions and the Giants. The Lions are just going to run up and down
Cooter.
The field, not make any substitutions. They have the offense to do it, and see if you can outscore the other team.
So this is the year, according to you, that we may finally pay some attention to Detroit.
We pay attention.
The key, we a couple years paid ago. Very little attention
the
to
the key
Lions.
To football in the NFL.
Whoa,
is.
Let me write this down. Hang on.
You ready?
Yep. Wes's findings.
I found this to be true.
Heat of football. This is big.
Double teams. Can you draw them and can you beat them? In the last 2 years, the Lions have lost one on offense and one on defense. Calvin Johnson and Ndamukong Suh. Who do they have left on their roster who draws or beats double teams? Maybe Ziggy Ansah?
Ansah.
That's it. That's the list.
All right. Let's move on, gentlemen, to Sunday Night Football. On, yes, the throne of sleeves. Because it's going to be a little different this year, Greggy. Little bit different in New England.
Just Greg. It ends at the Greg.
I thought you hammered that home, Greg.
A little bit different.
Terrible name, by the way, Greg. Don't name your kids Greg. No one does anymore. So that's.
It's out. It's been phased
like
out.
Like Gary.
You're my Greggy, Greg.
It's better than Gary.
I want to tell you that Tom Brady is not playing in this game. It's happening. The suspensions, it held. Thankfully, he was brought to justice, Wes. And
what?
At a streak, Tom Brady was brought to justice.
There's a rule for this. It's $25,000 fine.
Well, you know who agrees with you? Carson Palmer. He said,
yeah, he did.
The punishment, he's got to do
Stick
the crime.
Home, look at the full quotes from Carson Palmer. He was a lot more mealy-mouthed about it than that.
Well, just because he didn't speak well doesn't mean that he didn't have that opinion. But anyway.
He gave about 14 different opinions in one paragraph.
Tom Brady started, and this even goes back to.
Let's stick on Deflategate, please, for the 3 minutes we have for this game.
Bill Simmons joining the show soon.
Yeah, the dreaded 2008 season opener. For the Patriots. Tommy started that game too, famously, of course. So 14 straight years, Tom Brady has been your opening day quarterback. Not the case this year. And now here comes Jimmy Garoppolo, and we're finally going to get to see if this guy can play. And let me say something. You know, not only is he going to be in the primetime spotlight, this man hasn't started a football game since 2013 against Towson in Maryland. He's going to be nervous, Greg. He's going to be nervous.
Underrated squad in Towson. I liked what they did.
The Tigers.
You know, Bill Belichick knows not just how to accentuate strengths, but to limit weaknesses. I don't think they're going to put everything on Garoppolo. Talk about a team that's going to play fast this weekend. I don't think they're going to play in a huddle a lot. I think they're going to play in a two-minute offense as much as you can. And if Rob Gronkowski doesn't play in this game, their chance.
He's going to play, right?
No, it sounds.
I don't know.
Sounds like this is very much up in the air. Has barely, if practiced, if at all, since
called
August
himself 15. Week to week.
Two sources tell the Boston Herald that Gronk will play Sunday, barring an unexpected.
But our own NFL media insider Ian Rappaport.
I go to outside sources personally.
Definitely raising some caution flags here.
Gronk himself raising caution flags, saying he's nowhere near 100% and will likely be a game time decision. Called himself week to week. If you don't have Tom Brady and Gronk. That is traditionally in New England without Gronk, they're an average offense.
Right. I mean, that and going on the road in one of the toughest places to play against one of the best teams in football, it's about as hard a test as you could have for Bill Belichick's coaching abilities.
I mean, if there's any staff that I trust to take a Jimmy Garoppolo and over the course of two full off seasons, frankly, give him a lot of work and develop him. This is the staff. This is Bill Belichick. This is Josh McDaniels. I don't think that it's going to be some sort of offensive dud by the Patriots, but they are playing a team that you want to talk about the Cardinals had their issues in the preseason. I mean, give me a break. They're going to be fine on offense.
Your point is taken, but this coaching staff did not develop Ryan Mallett. They didn't develop Brian Hoyer.
No, but they also didn't. They also got rid of those quarterbacks. They, you know, you get used to, you spend a certain amount of time and then they make a move on him. They seem to think with Jimmy Garoppolo that there is a completely different type of player here. They talk about him from
the neck up.
They
thought that about those last two guys.
Well, and I don't hear them talking about Ryan Mallett that way. Ryan Mallett was tucked away and no one heard from him for 3 years. Jimmy Garoppolo has
has
their confidence to more of a degree. He has to.
They tried to have Mike Lombardi trade Ryan Mallett for them through NFL Network airwaves, essentially, for a couple years. They were trying to get rid of Ryan.
Nice callback, Greg.
Are you calling Mike Mayock a mouthpiece for Mike Lombardi?
Michael Lombardi, I said.
Well, Mayock was the one who was coming out writing the weeds.
I'm not saying Ryan Mallett.
Let's go down this road, please.
I want to know if Honey Badger is Honey Badger. Everyone,
yes.
Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Brandon Williams is starting at cornerback. It's a thin position for Arizona. If Gronk is healthy, this is a team in the Patriots that are going to want to play four or five on the outside the whole time and see if these cornerbacks can play.
Brandon Williams is interesting because if Tom Brady's the quarterback, he is attacking him relentlessly almost every down, and I don't know if Garoppolo can do that.
Dan, I went down to a laboratory too.
Did you use mine? I know I gave you my spare key when I'm away.
I found. Do you know what happened the last time Tom Brady didn't start Week One for the Patriots that season? What happened?
What happened?
They won the Super Bowl. That's what happened.
Okay, you're going all the way back in the time machine to 2001.
That's a fact.
Is there any relevance to that?
Well, he was trying to make it sound like just because Brady doesn't start Week One that they're in trouble.
But I sense a little bit of concern on Greg's part.
Yeah, that was I think a little desperate.
A little bit of concern.
They're in trouble every time Tom Brady doesn't start a game.
Let's move on. And by the way, can we make a note, Sid, Carrie Underwood's new song debuting before this game? I'd like to clip that off and listen to it on the show.
All right.
I will be fine with or without it.
You must have missed, Dan, that they released the song, I believe, on iTunes.
Yeah.
For all the big Sunday night song fans out there.
basically me.
I mean, I would be scared of the list of people that bought that song a week ahead of time on iTunes.
The name's under Dan.
I think the name is Oh Sunday Night.
Is that what
they what?
People should be on a watch list.
Is it a Christmas carol?
No, I mean, first of all, it's a Grammy award-winning songstress, so let's give her some respect. And number two, even though it's on iTunes, I'm waiting till Sunday night because I want the whole package, the multimedia package.
I mean, the only positive out of this entire charade is that the old song has been deep sixed.
Yeah, it's over for the old song. Enough of that.
I miss the pink version.
Joan Jett stuff. I like, you know, Joan Jett is a legend, but it's time for something new, and that's what Carrie brought. Moving on. Monday Night Football, two games. Greg loves the Monday Night Football doubleheader week one every year. And we'll talk about the Steelers at Redskins first. It's, you know, let's hear about the Redskins here, Greg, because they had 9 wins against teams at 500 and below last year. They have to beat some good teams to really get us to believe in them a little bit, and the Steelers are a good team.
I don't know if we've talked about any NFL team less than the Redskins over the last 3 or 4 months. Does that seem right? It's weird how little that we've talked about.
Well, for once, they're drama free with Robert Griffin not there.
I think they've enjoyed the lack of drama there. What I don't think they'll enjoy is Kirk Cousins coming back to the pack. I don't know if this is the week that it happens. The Steelers have a lot of questions in the secondary. I don't know if they're going to be a great defense this year, but I do expect Kirk Cousins to kind of not turn into a pumpkin, but to turn into a mid-level starter again.
Who would you say the NFL cognoscenti thinks will win this game?
The Steelers.
I'm calling for an upset. I think the Redskins are going to win this game at home. And I'm not sure without Le'Veon Bell, without Martavis Bryant, maybe the Redskins have a more powerful offense.
I'm with you, Wes. I think that playing at home on Monday night, Steelers a little bit undermanned. I would not be surprised at all if the Redskins won that, and that would be my pick.
This is one game that I think they did a good job with Monday Night Football because one of the biggest offseason moves was Josh Norman, who right out of the gate gets Antonio Brown. That's a huge part of this. And then in week two gets Dez Bryant, week three Odell Beckham. So we're going to find out real quick what's going on with Josh Norman.
Not going to be shadowing Antonio Brown. And honestly, is Josh Norman that much better than Bashaud Breeland? I don't think he is.
No. And I want to see, though, we've heard a lot of good things about DeSean Jackson this offseason. What DeSean Jackson are you getting? What Pierre Garçon are you getting? Because he wasn't really Pierre Garçon last year. Jordan Reed seems healthy, seems like he's going to be a breakout player. If those three guys are as good as they possibly can be, then I don't think Cousins can blow this, and they'll be fine. They'll win games. They'll score points.
So for the first time in two seasons with Kirk Cousins, they'd beat a winning team. this is a 0-0 team, I guess. But, I mean, that's the one thing the Redskins did not do last season.
I'm taking the Steelers. I mean, I would take Ben Roethlisberger in this matchup any time. And I think year two in this Steelers defense, they did change it a little bit last year. They're going to be better.
You want to bring back hero picks?
Your boy Ryan Shazier.
You want to bring back hero picks?
Well, we'd have to all be actually picking the games each time. We're kind of sometimes picking, sometimes not. The Thursday night game, I got a hero pick, so I might go one up on the whole group.
Well, you're either in or out. You can't be honking about your hero pick victory if that game turns out in your favor. You got it. Here's your chance.
Not even making picks anywhere. Where are you making these picks?
Right now, we'll decide. We'll make the picks if you're in. Are we in lockstep on this?
I'm in.
If Greg gets back in on hero picks,
where is
it
even being kept track of?
It's not
on this podcast.
Yeah, I think it's
Nick Fortiel will add a column on the website.
Bingo.
Sorry, Nick.
Nick's like, I have two jobs. I've got a family. Well, who are you people?
Maybe
not Nick, but somebody. Unless Nick wants to do it.
I'll consider it during the off week. We haven't made this week's picks yet, so.
We can run them down right now.
It's too much pressure.
All right, let's talk after the show.
Listeners right, drifting away.
Moving on to the final Monday night game and the final game of the
week. We have to talk about this one?
We should talk
every
about
week
this
one game is special.
All
flowers.
Special. Special little flowers.
This one's a little more special.
Them all. The L.A. Rams open up their season. Not in L.A. yet. That will happen the following week. They will now play against the 49ers at Levi's Stadium, Wes. Site of Super Bowl 50. And Mark, spin me some gold. Why is this a game people should stay up late to watch?
I think it's historically significant for the most obvious reason of all. The last time the L.A. Rams were the L.A. Rams and played a game was Christmas Eve, 1994, back when Greg was about 6 years old. That's 7,934 days ago. So, yes, for that alone, I think if you are a football historian, that matters. But the note, to go off what Wes said.
Does that really matter?
It hasn't even been 8,000 days.
I think it does matter. What I did write, though, was these are the two most, for me, the two most depressing preseason journeys colliding in week one. Because,
did you watch the Bears?
The Bears are up there, but the Bears didn't have the expectations, okay. I don't think, in some way. Because if you're Chip Kelly's offense, you want to see, you know, the 49ers come out with a new reimagined identity. We saw none of that. There's just nothing happening with the skill position group in San Francisco. And if you're the Rams topped the Niners by a million miles because people didn't think San Francisco would be very good. You're getting Blaine Gabbert versus Case Keenum because the guy that you traded up for the number one pick, Jared Goff, is sitting as your number three quarterback right now after one of the most underwhelming summers by a number one pick in our lifetime. So I would be very concerned if you're a fan of either team. It's going to be a long autumn.
Well, that makes it a big game, though. That makes it a not yeah,
until
makes
week
it,
two.
What's a big
I don't
game?
Know.
This I'm one? Saying this is a big game for these two coaching staff and these two teams because if you can't pick
sell
off,
it, Greg.
If you can't pick off either one of them, it's going to feel real hopeless. I don't think the Rams are so.
It's like a check sticking out of Greg's pocket with an ESPN logo on it.
I don't think the Rams are so talentless that it's crazy to imagine that defense putting together some wins this season. But if you're going to be in the mix and not be an effing 7-9 team like Jeff Fisher, maybe it's not a big game for the 49ers. It's a big game for the Rams. You've got to win this game.
Go to San Francisco or Santa Clara, win that game. Because if you lose that game, 7-9 or worse is almost virtually guaranteed because the schedule is going to tighten up. Got to win these types of games.
You have to.
I find it interesting that while we were recording this podcast, NFL media insider Ian Rappaport reported that
he's NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, new branding inside the building.
NFL Network insider.
Yeah. Ooh.
Rap Sheet.
Yeah.
Reported that the Rams and Broncos discussed the Case Keenum trade during the preseason. And once the Broncos liked how Trevor Siemian played, that trade didn't go down.
Wow. The Rams like Sean Mannion, too.
Well, we know that.
Yeah.
I think that's the only explanation for that. We might see Sean Mannion.
We will.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Here's
at
the
all.
Thing. I'm excited to watch this game. I know that sounds crazy. I'm not just saying that to say. I legitimately am. I think the 49ers could be fun. But as exciting as this.
Wait, what?
I think the 49ers are so weird that Chip Kelly, who I'm fascinated by, with this bizarre group of players that he has to coach, I just want to see what happens.
Let me ask you this. Is it a good idea to play the most up-tempo offense in the league with such a talent-poor roster that you'd be doing three and outs over and over
against
and
the
over.
Great front seven. And what I was going to get to was probably isn't going to live up to my own hype because these defenses are both so much better than the opposing offenses. It'll probably be 9-6.
Well,
all right,
we'll can't see. Even stop talking about
one last thing is Chip Kelly's defense.
Wow, what a game this must be.
Well, there is a lot going on. It's week one, but I mean, Chip Kelly's defenses have always suffered, and defensive players start to grumble for how often they're out on the field. Jim O'Neill is your defensive coordinator who came out of Cleveland. What was the resume there? Couldn't stop the run to give a damn for 2 years in a row. And now you're trying to stop Todd Gurley in week one. There's your test. Let's find out what kind of defense you have in San Francisco.
We will be back on Sunday night with our week one recap show where we recap all the games. So make sure you check that out. But until then, it is time, everyone, to watch actual football that counts.
Woo!
So let's do it. Until Sunday, this is Dan Hansis signing off for Quiet Storm. Da mailman. It's like the Bears, get it? The boss and La Cid behind the glass. Tell real football!